thank you. It's a cold night, and I would just as soon be home waiting for the Steeler game to get started. But here we are, and thank you all for being here. I got to qualify two ways here today to speak. My name is Leslie. My full name is Leslie Gray. I am an alcoholic. And in order to qualify to speak at this meeting, you need to have 30 years of continuous sobriety. And so I had my last drink February 23rd of 1981. And so that's 38 years and some change. So I was very young then. I'm not so young now. I've just retired. That's how long, you know. I mean, I got so blessedly got sober as a young woman, and without you know, the grace of God, one day at a time, I wouldn't be in the position that I find myself in to retire with some measure of dignity and security. So thank all of you for affording me that. I don't know, who knows where it would have been. But anyway, the sixth step is was read to us, and my gosh, and let me... Nope, I got it. I have a 12 and 12 book here. So we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character is how the step reads. And as I was reading about this and looking, thinking about it and looking in the different books, I don't have the big book this week. If you've been here, you know that's a little departure for me. But, you know, there's about a half a page written about the sixth step, you know, step six in the big book. I had to go elsewhere, you know, for some other source material. So aside from my own experience, I mean, I will include that, but as I thought about it, it's to take step six is about the next level of getting ready. It's another small step, kind of groping to another level of surrender. And, you know, when I took the first step, I had to surrender my drinking. I had to surrender that idea that I had any control over it. That anytime I took a drink, that it wasn't going to end in some kind of disaster. It was just a matter of the degree of disaster it was going to end in. And so as I go through to step six, you know, they all these steps build on each other, and I've said it before in these talks week by week, and I'll say it again. For me, it is important that the steps are a felt experience, that it has to go from the brain to the heart and to the gut. Otherwise, I could just run through these like a homework assignment, and it wouldn't mean squat. It just wouldn't mean anything. I'd have nothing. So, and step six is another one like that. Step two is like that. Step one is like that. But to start to surrender. So the steps run in a chain, and so we have to look back at step five. And in step five, we admitted all of our defects to God, ourselves, and another human being. So there they are. Okay, and it is a relief to state them and to recognize them and acknowledge them. But now what am I going to do with them? I was driving myself crazy, and I started to drive poor Jerry back there crazy about this phrase that popped into my head. But anyway, step five brought these into my awareness, and now what do I do with this stuff? And I'm going to go back to one of my favorite books, As Bill Sees It. I've gone along my old broken down is just to show you. This is what a new one looks like. This is what mine looks like. So, in fact, underneath it, there is the paper cover is long gone. But anyway, mine is well used and well loved. But On page 27 of his bill sees that this is from a grapevine of November 1960. And this little passage is called Three Choices. The immediate object of our quest is sobriety, freedom from alcohol, and all of its baleful consequences. Without this freedom, we have nothing. Paradoxically, though, we can achieve no liberation from the alcohol obsession until we become willing to deal with those character defects which have landed us in that helpless condition. In this freedom quest, we are always given three choices. A rebellious refusal to work upon our glaring defects can be almost a certain ticket to destruction. Or perhaps for a time we can stay sober with a minimum of self-improvement and settle ourselves into a comfortable but often dangerous mediocrity. Or finally, we can continuously try hard for those sterling qualities that can add up to fineness of spirit and action, true and lasting freedom under God. And that's kind of, I guess, those are our choices, you know. God, in my understanding, is not boorish. He gives me a choice. I can buy in or not. I can live well or not. I heard a speaker a while back. He was a conference speaker, and I didn't hear him in person. He came to Erie. I got the disc, and he left a huge impression on me. But he said, you know, how he kept his, one of his repeating refrains was, how free do you want to be, and what kind of recovery do you want? And he said, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have everything from chopped beef to filet mignon. So what do you want? What do you want? What are you willing to work for? And that was Rich B. He's a lawyer, in case you haven't heard him, you know, but he very much spoke to me. I've worn out his disc. But you have a choice. And I want to go to, this is another one of my favorite passages in my well-worn book, but it fits here, and this is the essence of growth. And I know we talked about, I used this before on the first step, that it's so important, but I want to say it again, but only the bottom half of it. This is from the Grapevine, July 1965. The essence of all growth is a willingness to change for the better, and then an unremitting willingness to shoulder whatever responsibility this entails. So, you know, when I don't want to make a change, for me, underneath it, a lot of time it's fear. It's fear, or it's ego, or it's sometimes it's just laziness because I'm happy in my crap and it's not bad enough yet. I'm not hurting enough yet. Step six is, it's a beginning, that attitude of willingness to let God remove those defects. I'm not even asking for him to do it yet. I'm getting into the mental shape. You might recognize this as, you know, the steps kind of have recurring themes. It's like surrendering, getting ready, and then letting go. You know, letting go. It's like, oh, I'm in pain. Maybe, you know, maybe I can get my brain wrapped around this and now I'm ready to let go. And step six is one like that. But it's the next gateway into living better. They used to say that the person I was drank and the person I was will drink again, and I have to change. That means I have to change. That means I have to let go of this stuff. And finally, on page 103, this is from the Grapevine in January 1968. And I try to pull out some of this odd stuff because the people go to big book meetings and 12 and 12 meetings. But some of this other stuff you got to go to as Bill sees it. But the thought is this: how to translate a right mental conviction into a right emotional result and into easy, happy, and good living is the problem of life itself. And that's what this is about. This is the beginning of what this is about, is to start to acknowledge I've got defects. I've admitted them. Here I am. I've got things wrong with me that aren't straight up drinking. And God will help me. When am I going to let him? How can I get to that point of letting him? For myself and for many other people in the rooms, but I'll speak mainly for myself, I'm never ready to let go of anything until the pain drives me to it. You know, until my defect makes me so unhappy, just like my drinking, you know, until my drinking made me so unhappy, I had to let it go. Until a defect makes me so unhappy, I had to let it go. Here I sit. You know, I can know intellectually, but it has to come down to the heart and the gut. It has to, for me, it has to come down to the heart and the gut. But, the easiest way is if the pain of staying the same is less than the fear of going forward and letting it go, that's break point for me. That's break point. And I think, you know, that from what I see, that's break point in everybody. When am I sick and tired of being sick and tired? And it's the booze and it's my selfishness or my ego or all the things that's wrong with my character that get me in trouble again and again and gets me into the kind of distress that makes a drink look good. That's what that's about. So the defects, my defects are kind of what's in my way of being of use to God. I've got a laundry list of them, and if anyone knows me, you can recite them. You know, Jack knows a few. I mean, y'all know a few. But, you know, in the 12 and 12, because I like to go to the source, because I do. It talks about when we drink, we defy our instinctive desire for self-preservation and we seem bent upon self-destruction. So our disease works against our deepest instinct to preserve ourselves. And it goes on to talk about how alcohol defeats us. It certainly defeated me, or I wouldn't be here. And it talks about that how God can enter and get rid of our obsession, you know, our defects and the obsession for booze. But our powerful instinct to live can cooperate fully with our Creator's desire to give us a new life. And it also, I know it sounds kind of, I don't know, new agey, old, you know, Bible thundery, all put together. But for myself, among my beliefs is that God gives us a gift to be here. No one shows up here by accident to my way of thinking. I didn't. No one does. Whether we stay depends on us. Whether we accept the gift that God's trying to hand us is up to us. God won't make us take it. God will just offer it to us. We can choose to throw it away if we want to, you know. But this is what this is talking about. You know, God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. He did not, and according to the 12 and 12, it talks about he did not design man to destroy himself by alcohol, but he did give me an instinct to help him stay alive. And it talks about the natural desires and when we let them go past their intended purpose. I'm guilty of as many on that, but that we demand that life supplies us with more satisfaction or pleasure that's possible or due to us. And at that point, that's when we depart from God's vision and our greed, our selfishness, my greed, my selfishness, my desire to have things I didn't work for, maybe. My desire to have something that you have that looks good to me and that, you know, that I may not have any righteous claim to. But again, God, in what it says in the 12 and 12, and I want to read this word for word, but in no case does he render us white as snow and keep us that way without our cooperation. He asks only that we try as best we know how to make progress in the building of character. And it talks about this being a lifetime job. So if I had to be perfect tomorrow, I'm sorry. And in fact, you know, my first look at step six was probably 1982, 1981, and I'm still at it. There's still plenty of things wrong with me. It's something, you know, that in general I have, but you know, what I find is anytime, in order for me to get into pain, or if I ask for help in getting rid of a defect, I find myself confronted with the living of that defect. But anyway, what the book goes on to talk about is it makes that comparison of our alcohol, our drinking, and our other character defects. My character defects that made drinking look good to me, because I was dissolving my problems in alcohol. And I've said this in a previous week, but as an alcoholic, I was taught that I have a problem, and my problem has two solutions. I can drink myself into oblivion as often as possible, or I can put down my drink, work the program, get sober, and start to learn how to live with some dignity and some usefulness and some happiness among other people, instead of being selfish and drowning everything. The only urgent thing is to get started. So there again, in the 12 and 12, it talks about delay being dangerous and rebellion may be fatal. And so again, reminding us that our disease is fatal. You know, this is not, we're not kidding. They're not kidding. I believe it. I don't know how many people you all have seen die of our disease, but it happens. So it happens. I don't want to be among those people. God bless them. And this is the only way. It's this or that. But anyway, I want to talk a little bit about some of my the various defects without getting into a whole lot of detail. Okay. But Bruce was kind of giving me the jazz about, he says, I know you're smart, right? And I've said it. And so when we turn that around, I mean, I have, over many years, carried a defect of superiority. I am better than you. I am smarter than you. I do things better than you. I am more evolved than you. I even dress better than you. Okay? You know, really. Really, that Packer shirt. It's just, you know, if it's not black and gold, really, you know. Seriously. Greed, you know, I wanted things. And self-righteousness, you know, I'm right. Don't you dummies understand that? And you know how much trouble that gets you in with people? I can tell you a whole lot. Not a good way to live. And then my feelings get hurt. And then I'm, you know the rest. And the other thing was envy, you know, wanting something that you have, but not wanting to do what you did in order to get it. You know, I may be jealous of someone's wonderful house, but I don't want to work 16 hours a day and grow a business like they did in order to acquire that beautiful home. So, see, that's a problem with me. That's immaturity. And this alcoholic's immature. Many alcoholics are immature, but this one certainly is and can be and has spent a lot of time trying to get past that or grow past that. And then really the laziness, I am still lazy in many ways, and it just, that's a progress, not perfection. I want to Okay, we've got through all of that. I wanted to talk to, in case anyone is new or didn't know or forgot, about the book called Drop the Rock. It is a book that's completely devoted to step 6 and step 7. I know in Erie there is a meeting that is called, God, I can't remember what, it's Monday night. And thank you. Thank you so much. I've been there a few times, and they devote themselves to the study of the Drop the Rock book and the Ripple Effect book, which means they're studying step 6 and 7 all the time. So I went to this book because the big book is kind of thin on step 6 and step 7. And what they did was expand on a lot of this. And I would just encourage you to read, get your hands on Drop the Rock and read it for the analogy of it. And it's about a person who's trying to swim and holding on to the rock, which the rock is her, the metaphorical defects. And they're telling her, drop the rock, and she's sinking fast, drop the rock. So there's some other stories that go like that. But this book, I had highlighted some things in this, but it talks mainly about, this book talks a lot in the beginning, it's about trust and surrender. Step 6 requires us to stop struggling. God, while we do our part, once we allow room for God to work in our lives, we are making it possible for wonderful changes to take place. What happens when we don't take step 6, or if we refuse or think we don't need to, because once we've set our defects, so poof, they go. Well, that's not true. Okay, that's as delusional as I can take the next drink and have it be okay. But what this book talks about was, we all know individuals in recovery who have given up the booze or other addiction, yet they are staying dry or abstinent only by redirecting their intense inner misery into the lives of others. They won't work the 6th and 7th step. And I've met people like that. I have been a person like that. You know, when there's something wrong with me, I want to look at you. I want to tell you what's wrong with you, because it's so much easier than me looking at me. And it goes on and recites the point of God. It's important to remember that step 6 doesn't say, became entirely ready to make myself different. It says, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. That means God, not me, makes me different by giving me what it takes to change. It is my job to act and behave like the change has occurred. In doing this, the process of change does happen. Frequently, this involves emotional pain. I can attest to that, because it always has for me. The pain of living the way I have been becomes greater than the fear of change. It also involves, I'm going to skip that. This is a step of surrender and trust, not self-will and determination. I can't fix myself. If I could fix myself, I would have stopped drinking on willpower. And, you know, I've already introduced myself and told you when I got here, so we know how well that worked out for me. So I have to depend on God to do these things for me. And step 6 is a step of trust and surrender of things that stand in the way of my usefulness to God. And when my first sponsor told me, that this was about defects that keep me from being useful to God, and there's some little quirky things that it's okay to be, then that made me feel a little better. I didn't need to be perfect. I just needed to be sufficiently okay to be of use to God and to the people around me, to fit in, to live, to work, to be a coworker, a neighbor, a friend, and not be someone who is just the disruptor all the time. And this is driving me crazy. I remember reading somewhere in the big book that talks about our liquor was but a symptom, you know, and it tied in with this, and I can't find it. I'm so sorry. I'm kind of ending early because the last thing I have is, in as Bill sees it, and this is a snippet from AA Comes of Age. This is page 97 in As Bill Sees It. And I think it kind of sums up pretty decently step six, and it's called self-respect through sacrifice. At the beginning, we sacrificed alcohol. We had to, or it would have killed us, but we couldn't get rid of alcohol unless we made other sacrifices. We had to toss self-justification, self-pity, and anger right out the window. We had to quit the crazy contests for personal prestige and big bank balances. We had to take personal responsibility for our sorry state and quit blaming others for it. Were these sacrifices? Yes, they were. To gain enough humility and self-respect to stay alive at all, we had to give up what had really been our dearest possessions, our ambition and our illegitimate pride.
Thank you, Leslie. So now, our question and answer. Are my bats going dead? Ah! Those would help.
Uh-oh.
So if anybody has any questions for Leslie, or comments, as long as those comments are in the form of questions.
Are you all just waiting for the football game, or have I totally answered all your questions? Because, and my God, that would really fulfill my ego so nicely, too, that if I was the ultimate, you know, describer of step six.
Thanks, Leslie. Eric, alcoholic.
Hi, Eric.
When you're going through your character defects, a lot of them like laziness, you know, you can set small goals and work on certain things like that, but ego, that's almost ingrained into you. Do you have any recommendations on like service or things that can kind of bring you back down to earth to help work on that?
Well, you know, way back in the beginning, my first sponsor, because I thought I was so smart and special, she used to take me to, I got sober in Pittsburgh, and she used to take me to meetings at the Light of Life Rescue, was it Light of Life Rescue Mission? Yeah, the Light of Life Rescue Mission, and remind me very pointedly that you're no different than any of these guys, so get over yourself. And so to maybe put myself in a position to just be of service. I think you've said it pretty well, to be of service and to, yes, God takes care of some of that and has taken care of that for me whenever something annoys me or I think I'm not whatever, you know, don't fit or they don't fit what I think. So it seems to come to me again and again and again and again and until I learn how to deal with it. And so that ego, I mean, I've taken some lumps in life. I thought, you know, attaining a certain level of education, well, I ended up broke after that. I ended up, you know, and I just had to go and do what I had to do and found out the hard way. And slowly I didn't have to like it. You know, someone told me that we all have to eat some SHIT in this world and we don't have to like it, but we have to do it. And life kind of teaches it. And, you know, the thing about step six and all the reading and everything is that this is a lifetime process, bit by bit by bit. So When I get uncomfortable with ego, it's like I'm clashing with someone over that. When I'm lazy, things aren't getting done and I become uncomfortable in it. When I'm envious, it's just so awful to feel that way. And I might destroy a friendship or a positive relationship. So I hope that's helpful to you. Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.